Hello, this is Ken. I'm Ken Clark, and welcome to the sixth edition of Hot Topics. Today we have Lieutenant John Polino from the Berlin Mass Fire Department in, and I worked with John when I was the chief up there, and doesn't get any better personnel-wise than having John with you out on the street and the great things he did within the building. And just a little touch base here. Hot Topics is a fire and EMS-related podcast. The scope of the podcast is to share fire and EMS service-related experience of current and retired personnel on a multitude of local, regional, and national subject matter, operational items, and any other pertinent fire service-related subject matter. One thing I do want to say, it's not the intent of this podcast to second-guess or be the Monday morning quarterback to any operational decisions made by an incident commander. So we'll never go there on this show. It's that what happens on the street stays on the street. So my background a little bit, I'm third generation fire department with the town of Hopkinton. My grandfather, father, and I was blessed to work with two brothers as career personnel and two uncles and four cousins. And my last 7 years of my 44 years in Hopkinton, I was the chief of department. Today, we are going to invite John in, and I'm going to introduce him to you, and then we'll go over his bio, and then I got some questions for him at the end. But John, welcome.
Thank you,
Chief. It's a pleasure
to
have you. When we first set this up, the podcast is, as you know, is not my really big thing to kind of stand in front of people and talk like this, so it's challenging for me. But I know that of all the people that I dealt with, and there's a lot of good people in Berlin, that you always stick in my mind is that you, it was always, every day it was a pleasure to work with.
It was always a pleasure, yep.
Yep, and we kind of cut through the all the stuff earlier. His family's doing well. He's expecting another baby, and good for you. It's like he has a son, currently has one son, and then they're having another baby sometime in November. Wife's a sweetheart, so it's like good for you. That's, those are good things. But looking at John's bio here again, done a lot of training, and I think the people that are leaders in the fire service, there's very few that don't, on their own, go out and do this. You don't get paid for most of it. They do that to make themselves better and to bring a better product to the street. But he's got his bachelor's and master's in fire science. He's a Mass Fire Academy call volunteer recruit firefighter training program. Went through that to get his firefighter 1-2 certification. He's an EMTB. He's a hazmat at the operational level certification. Company officer, fire officer 1, fire instructor 1 certification, and he's also credentialed as a fire prevention officer, which is one of his functions in Berlin, is at level 1 and 2. He has advanced structural firefighting practices, bomb threat response guidance, compressed natural gas for first responders, confined space awareness, the MFA, Mass Fire Academy, the flashover simulator training, which is very, very interesting. And high voltage emergency awareness, which we deal with all the time. Here we deal with Eversource. Up there they deal with, remind me.
National Grid.
National Grid. Thank you, LT. Okay. And another important thing that we run into on the highway a lot, or you could run into it, is some human trafficking awareness, just to make them self-aware of what to look for out in the street when some of the odd things that we run into with the blue team. He has some training and introduction to transitional fire attack, MFIRS, which is a critical thing for Mass. It's the Mass Fire Incident Reporting System, and it shares with the State Fire Marshal's Office each department's annual statistics on all their calls. And there's probably, per call, there's probably 100 to 150 facts that are put in. It goes into the database at the Fire Marshal's Office and used in a very positive way to make the state safer. He's done mobile live fire training unit assistance, orientation on the new building code when they went to that 527 CMR, which took the fire prevention regulations and combined them with some other ones at NFPA and made a really nice document that was like you just knew and needed to get some awareness on it. He's had experience with compressed natural gas awareness, emergency responder rehab, which is critical at serious incidents, to make sure in cold weather and hot weather to make sure your people, your personnel are safe. Fire service air management, which is critical during a building. When you get people working in a building, again, John's one that has a lot of incident commander time out front, so he has to be aware of that. National Traffic Incident Management, again, like Hockington, they do a lot of work on the highway, which is 495 and maybe some on 290, but it's critical out there to park your apparatus in the appropriate spot to keep your personnel safe while they're working, and that's like critical to the safety of your personnel. Photovoltaic for the fire service on the solar panels, he has some experience with that. He has statewide fire and EMS mobilization plan training, which is critical if you have a mass casualty incident or a serious fire. That moves pre-structured resources from the around the state in to help out or go to some place to help somebody else out. Taking action against cancer in the fire service, and that's going to be one of our future episodes here, is the Mass Fire Academy through the Department of Public Health has a really good program for cancer screening for firefighters. And it's sad to say, but it's very prevalent with the things that we get exposed to during our careers, and they track it there. And even a positive result of their program where it identified skin cancer that I didn't know that I had and had it dealt with. So it's I'm at the point where I only have to go to the dermatologist every 6 months. So it's in a real good spot because of the great job they do up the Fire Academy with that program. He's a technician level in trench rescue, technician level in service ice rescue, which is important with all the ponds and streams and water that we have in this area. And then operational with the rope rescue. And there's another program that we're going to talk about later is the drone, licensed drone operator. You have to get a license to do that. And in the town of Berlin, they have a shared program with the blue team and the red team to operate drones. So, but John, welcome. I talked a lot about you there. Yep. He's well-rounded, like I said before. And how's your family doing?
Family's awesome.
Good.
Family's awesome.
Yeah, looking forward.
Keeping me busy.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I can understand you when you say that. And when and how old were you when you started come into the fire service?
So I started when I was 16 as an auxiliary member with the Hudson Fire Department. Yeah. Did that until they gave me the boot. Took civil service a couple times, never progressed with civil service, and then ended up joining the Berlin Fire Department in 2013. And I've been there ever since. Yeah. Never joined another department and settled my roots there. So. Yeah. I've been very fortunate with the Berlin Fire Department. They've given me a lot of opportunities and taken full advantage of everything that's been thrown my way. So,
yep. One of the things that I want to talk about with John today is the challenges that he faces on a day-to-day basis with a fairly small population. I think, a little over 3,000 to 4,000, something like that?
I think 4,000? It's 37.
37, now. Yep, yeah. Good. And 100 people, and one of the other big operational challenges they got there, there's no municipal water supply. So they either have to bring all the water that they need to use or go and get it someplace. It's not like there's a hydrant every 500 feet around that community. That was one of the first things I had culture shock when I went there. And for the people who don't know, I went there after I retired from Hopkinton in July of 19. It was supposed to be for 3 or 4 months to help them and end up staying just shy of 4 years. It was very enjoyable. It brought me back to a time where Hopkinton was probably 20-something years ago. I could see a lot of similarities in that. And but it was every day. I get to work with him every day. So life was good. So how do you address that subject matter that I just talked about was as a department, as an individual, when you're the incident commander, I know you're not the chief, but it's like, will be someday, I hope, but it's like, how do you address that no municipal water supply? Like training, how do you guys get into that?
Training is number one. I mean, you're only as good. You can have all the equipment in the world, but if you don't know how to use it, and that's nothing. So we train very hard on rural water supply. We do a rural hitch. We used to do bag operations, but we kind of transitioned away from that because of you. Bag operations are just so labor intensive, manpower critical. So we primarily run rural hitch operations with tanker shuttles, and we ramped up our run cards to beef up tankers right off the bat.
Yep.
So if you look at our run cards, we have 4 tankers just on like a first alarm. So our run cards are first alarm working fire. Yep. So right off of first alarm, we beefed it up. So just everyone's delayed. Everyone's got staffing issues now. Everyone's busier than ever. So start them early. That's our mentality. So,
no, because you can turn them around a lot easier than you can when you have to wait for them.
You can always send them home.
And I smile when I heard you say the rural hitch. I remember one of my first couple of weeks there, I got a call from the Boylston chief. He says, we're going to do our rural hitch drill, and can you come and you guys want to participate? And I said, of course, Joe, of course. Yep. So I immediately go out on the floor and said, what's a rural hitch? Coming from Hopkins, and we have a hydrant every 500 feet in 80% of the town, other than the highways and stuff in some remote areas. And they brought out the piece, the clapper Siameses. And instead of the 2.5, which we had here years ago, they're all 4-inch and 5-inch.
Yeah.
So it was like, as soon as they showed me the piece, I said, I know exactly what you want to do.
What's going on, yeah.
Yep, so it was like, it was an eye-opener to me, but they were so efficient at moving water when they had to go find it. They could get 1,000 gallon minutes out of a big puddle.
Yep.
You know what I mean? They're really good at it.
Because everyone in the area is kind of in the same boat.
Yep.
So everyone's doing the same drill. So if Stowe's doing a tanker shuttle, we're jumping on board and we're sending the newer guys to, hey, go touch upon these skills because we need it. They're valuable skills. And no one has that many fires nowadays. Yeah. So they're skills that you lose. So it's an interesting dynamic we have.
But like you said, it's area wide up there, and a lot. It's a little bit more on the rural side up there, so there's great distances and.
Oh yeah. A lot of common driveways we have water holes, but the water holes are scattered throughout town.
And seasonal.
And seasonal, of course. I mean, we've had record droughts, so that was an added challenge, which increased times for travels for our tankers. And the fall was definitely challenging for a lot of communities. So.
Yep. And then we made the transition when I was there from 5-inch
to 4,
supply hose to 4. It was kind of be more in like what everyone was doing in the area. I think you guys were the last one with 4.
Yeah, we were one of the
last. Other than Harvard, when you get up there, I think they run 5.
They're still running 5, but just operationally, with everyone around us, everyone's running 4. Mm-hmm. So it just made sense for us to make that switch. Mm-hmm. So
We actually got a federal grant to have all the money to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, a lot of new hose.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Yep. A lot of cardboard boxes.
They
have a ton of hose.
A lot of pallets.
Yeah. There you go. How is your 5-inch program going up there? I know that you, when Dave retired, you took on that responsibility. How is that going?
Fire prevention's good, busy. We're starting the busy season, so the shops at Highland Commons are picking up again. A lot of new tenant spaces coming in. A lot of challenges up there, code compliance issues, but I'm doing a lot of it myself, so trying to find a way to tell the guys that this is how I want it done, and trying to keep the consistency is kind of challenging.
Very.
But it's a work in progress.
Yep.
But we're getting there.
I know. I go there every Saturday morning. My wife and I do our food shopping up there. And I know that there's is it a wine and spirits or?
Highland Spirits,
Highland Spirits. Yep. That's getting refurbed now, it looks like.
Yeah.
And for the people who don't know, this is the same mall area that Cabela's is in up in Berlin. There. It's like probably half in Berlin and half in a town of Hudson. Yep. So they share responsibility for some of the buildings. And the one thing that made me smile is the BJ's up there actually has a line
right
down
that.
The floor. This is the Hudson side, and this is the Berlin side. They did that when they made the building.
Yeah.
So it's like interesting to see that. Yeah. But as a shared response on some of the buildings, Hudson will come in at the same time as Berlin, and they work really, really well together.
Yeah, our relationship with them has grown.
Yeah.
So we're doing good.
That's a very good thing.
We're in a good spot right now. So.
Yeah. I heard that you've had some recent hirings, and how's that allowed you to meet the community's day-to-day operational challenges?
So we recently hired two full-time staff, which brought us up to, with myself, five.
Yep.
So I currently run a day schedule Monday through Thursday, and the other four full-time staff members work a rotating schedule. That brought us up to at least put one full-time person on 24 hours. There's still some holes in the schedule, it's still a work in progress. As staffing throughout the fire service is challenging right now. But it's a work in progress. We're still running per diem shifts. But just we're coming into the summer months where everyone's got family vacations, other commitments. So it is very challenging. And just call departments throughout the country are just they're hurting.
Yeah.
They're just hurting.
Yeah,
so.
It's not just there, it's everywhere. And I know that when I came there, I was blessed to have a little bit of money. They wanted to do something with the per diems, and it's like they had the money but didn't have the program set up.
Exactly.
So we worked together to set up the per diem program. And what that is they take the certified firefighter 1-2s and the EMTs, and they're allowed to work a shift. It was at night. They had some career personnel on during the day, but when they made their shift change at, I think it was 6? 5?
6. We do a 6 a.m.
They would go
6 p.m.
A 6 to... the six per diem shift with two people, which they never had night coverage.
No.
So critically, it was with on the EMS side, the ambulance was out immediately.
Yeah.
And also, they had two people on that automatically on the first engine or whatever piece of apparatus.
Yeah. Our priority with staffing is primarily the ambulance.
Yeah.
So we have those two ambulances that's our bread and butter. We want to staff that. That's the expectation from the community is that if they call 911 for an ambulance, we're going to be there.
Yeah.
Obviously, if it's a fire call, we have the call groups that are coming. So there's a slight delay on fire calls, but the ambulance is priority. We try and get that out the door and staffed fully. But it's a challenge. Hopefully, in the next coming months, we'll come up with come back to the table with a plan on staff and with the second floor renovations, that'll kind of drive that staffing change. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what the next year brings.
Yeah, it's ongoing.
I
have to give them, it's very dynamic. The community's growing quickly.
It is. Yep.
And it's challenging to keep up.
It is.
And when he talks about the second floor, they had a space almost like an attic up over the crew quarters, the current crew quarters business side of the fire department, and they got to make it into a crew quarters with a living room and a kitchen.
10 bunk rooms, day room, kitchen. Yeah. Assabit Vocational School is actually doing all the work.
Yep.
And they've been doing an amazing job. Those kids are there every day.
Yeah.
And they're just doing a wonderful job. The teachers that are there teaching them, it's phenomenal the work that they're doing. So.
It's good to see those kids be able to get into the trade.
Oh, yeah. That's they're all excited. They're doing a very good job.
Yeah.
So,
what are some of the other challenges that that you're facing now and working with the chief to come over here? I know we talked about the staffing. You're all set equipment-wise, or you're working? Where are you with capital projects like that?
No, I think our biggest issue right now, equipment, is immaculate. We have the best equipment. We just don't have staffing.
Yeah.
I know some departments have terrible equipment and a bunch of people. We have the opposite problem.
Yeah.
I think that's the next big hurdle that we have for us is how do we get more people through the door? No one has the commitment anymore to be a call firefighter. And we're seeing that nationwide. There's articles every day written.
Yep. It's everywhere.
Yeah. Even volunteer departments. Yeah. So how do we, how does the fire service attack that?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's career staffing. But career staffing, more money, benefits, like there's a whole different side to that.
A whole different ball game. Yeah. Nope.
So I think that's the next big thing to
and
tackle.
And I know in the short time I was there, we worked on that some. For the day staff, but kudos to the chief and you for working together and getting that around the clock, 24/7.
It's just the chief. The chief's I'm just the worker bee.
Yeah.
Chief's the brain.
Give yourself
behind
more
it.
Credit than that. You guys work together. You got over 10 years of experience there now. Yep. Is what have been some of your most memorable incident responses, positive or negative, you know what I mean? What sticks in your mind? What's some of the stuff that you've... We opened that box with the last
episode
with Fran, and it was like we just rolled. But what's some of the stuff that...
So let's see here. So we're a very dynamic community. Obviously, no water. One thing that really sticks out is a couple years ago, we had the house explosion, which was very significant for our community. Even around us, no one's ever had an incident like that. And being having a new chief who wasn't familiar with the community and the personalities from the different communities, I think it was nice to see this large scale of that incident, how the communities came in and supported us.
Yep.
The surrounding chiefs came in and supported us operationally. I think that was huge just to show how the fire service really is. It doesn't matter where you come from. Everyone's got your back. So it was nice to see. That was a long day. We had the house explosion that morning, 120-acre brush fire up on Mount Pisgah, followed by a train derailment the same day. So we were smoked. And just the support and from our mutual aid partners was huge that day.
Yeah.
So it was that was one day that'll stick with me forever.
Yep. There you go.
So yeah, that was
And I have faith in that because I know that the new chief, Mike, and you have a strong command presence and be able to get all those incidents started in the right direction and bring them to a really good...
Nope, that house explosion was, I think it was at 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning, and the first arriving crew showed up on the ambulance and just showed up to pure chaos. And the lieutenant who was on the ambulance did an amazing job. He showed up and just started calling in resources because we didn't know what we needed, so he just started... We're going to need a structural collapse team. And he got the ball rolling. Chief showed up, requested a second alarm assignment, and got more resources coming in. But,
that was
a long duration event. Yep. So, it went smoothly for his first day.
And he was only, he was.
I think it was his first month.
Yeah.
So
welcome.
Yeah, that black cloud came in pretty quick.
Yeah,
so
it does.
Yeah,
luckily it's not in threes for him. But it's that was good. What now? What are some of your favorite hobbies and interests outside the fire department?
So I'm a big beach guy, as well as my wife. So we spend a lot of time on the beach.
Where's your favorite place to go?
Down on the Cape, Nauset Beach.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So we like to watch the sharks.
Yeah.
And spend a lot of
from
time
a
on
distance,
the beach.
I hope.
Of course. Love spending time with friends and family. We spend a lot of time at home doing some yard work, keeping the house nice and tidy.
There you go.
We have a 2-year-old son, so he keeps us plenty busy running around. We're pretty low-key people, you know. Simple things.
Yeah.
Things keep us happy.
And we're down to, the time of the period. Thank you for your input, LT.
Thank you, Chief.
At the end here, I'd like to... have people send me their over my hot topics at hcam.tv questions for the end. My first one I got is from Joe in Hopkinen. How much do fire trucks and ambulances cost? And I know that Ashland just replaced a tower ladder at $2.1 or $2.2 million. I know, and we'll just go to what did you, your engine and I think the ambulance was what, 4-something?
Yeah, so we just got a new ambulance that came in at 460.
Yep.
The new engine, I think, is going to be in the ballpark of 800,000.
Yeah.
And there was nothing fancy about it.
Nope.
But yeah, they vary. You can get very creative or very budget friendly with these things. Yeah. So it all depends on how big your wallet is.
Yeah, and one thing about the apparatus here is the booster tank. So that's the tank inside it, the fire truck that holds water, is because of their lack of municipal hydrants, is usually a little bit larger than
most
people.
Yeah, we usually have 1,500 gallon tanks.
Yeah.
Our tanker is 3,000.
Yep.
So we carry a lot of water on our engines.
That's all you got. You got no hydrants, so they hit it hard with that first hit, and it's like, and see what happens.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, from Stephen Hopkinen. How long does it take to train a firefighter? My experience with it at the academy is once they're hired and sent to the academy, it's the career firefighter is 11 weeks, and then they graduate. And then for a paramedic, and most people now, the paramedics come in already trained, but that's up to a year plus of training, depending on which program they go to. And that will give you a field workable ALS person at that paramedic level, and they do just do great, great things.
Yep. Yeah, the call vol program I know is a couple months of nights and weekends.
Yep.
So I think that's about 3-4 months, if my memory serves me right. But when we send our personnel to the call vol program, it's nights and weekends, and then they're usually on a year probation. So throughout that year, they're still training and trying to figure out how we operationally do things.
Yeah.
So it's a long process.
In my experience, the call volunteer is very, very similar to the career personnel of the 11 weeks, except the, some of the subject matter isn't quite as in-depth as that. If you do 5 hours of live burns, it might only be three or four. It's a little bit less, but it gives them that 1-2 certification. They take the tests, got to pass all the tests and get the certification, but they have they participate in all the same things that the careers do. It's just a little bit easier for call or volunteer people who have a primary job, not at the firehouse, so they can go nights and weekends. It's actually very challenging for them to fit between their personnel.
It's a big commitment.
And a huge commitment.
Big commitment.
And the last question of the day from Peter in Hopkinton. Does Hopkinton Fire still have that child infant car seat installation program? They do. And I know now there's at least 3 people in Hopkinton. And you still do that
still
up
one,
in Berlin?
Yep.
We started that there.
Yep.
And that helps new families or families who may have a question with infant car seats or boosters or whatever to get them installed properly. And so it's safe for the family and especially safe for the young child that's in them. So that's a really good...
It's a good program. Good
program.
Community relation thing.
Exactly. Community engagement. So we're at the end of our time today. And again, one thing I want to ask the audience is to send me any questions they may have about the fire or EMS service. And my email at HCAM is hottopics, HOTTOPICS, at HCAM, HCAM.TV. Any kind of question you got, ship it to my email, and I'll ask it on the show. I only use the first name, so no one can, if someone feels funny asking, I only use the first name. So it's like, and it's good to see the questions that come in and make me smile sometimes when I see the on my email. But don't be afraid to send them to me. I do try to do 3 or 4 per episode. And thank you very much. And again, I'd like to thank HCAM TV at 77 Main Street for having us for episode 6 today. And I want to thank Lieutenant Polino for taking time from his busy schedule to be with us. Thank you, LT.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Always. And have a great and safe day.